Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network. Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together.
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Actually, what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Everybody, we don't think I've tampered with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic. The NBA Finals continue. We got ourselves a series. We head into Game 6 on Tuesday. The Bucks take control of this thing up 3-2. We've had the block. We've had the pass. We've had the oop. The Milwaukee folks are very excited about the prospect of a first championship since 1971. Here today to break it all down, we got Anthony Slater, who is platooning as Suns beat writer, but also Warriors guy and Team USA extraordinaire out west. Slater, what's up, brother?
I don't do road games. I'm a DH. I don't do road games.
Phoenix only. Phoenix only. So we got Jovan Buha covering on the Milwaukee side. But on the pod with us today, Eric Name. Listen, man, Eric, you know, Giannis was a household name, but the casuals now are enjoying who he is, his personality, his game. And this is what the NBA final stage can do for a young, incredible talent. I think you can relate to that. The Eric Name work is now on display. People get to read you every day. How do you feel about how present you have been staying? Are you locked into the moment? How is your ego? How is your pride, Eric? How are we doing?
You know, when you think about people reading you every day, that's your ego. And you don't want to be thinking about your ego. You want to be staying in the moment. You want to think about your humility. So right now, the only thing I'm focused on is this podcast and making sure it's the best podcast that it can be.
In the moment.
Pride is when you look at your metrics page.
You know, yeah. Wait a minute. I feel like that's a shot at Amick here because Slater's been on the road with me and I'm a little guilty of looking at our metrics every so often. So, all right, I got pride to work on. But obviously, if you somehow been living in a cave and not watching the media stuff with these finals, you know, we got the basketball stuff, guys. But then we have what for me has honestly been the highlight of covering these finals is some of the media stuff and specifically Giannis and the interview sessions that he has had with us. And if people don't know, just to paint the picture real quick, because of COVID, things are very different in terms of press conferences. You got approximately 15 reporters getting tested every day, and a limit on the numbers of people who are allowed to talk to the players in person. And so I actually believe that whether it's Giannis or Chris Paul, Devin Booker, all these guys that we've had some really good conversations. And you know, it's weird to say that in a big group like that, but it's different than a normal press conference where there might be, you know, 60, 70 people in a room and a different crowd. And Giannis got a lot of attention a few days ago when I had asked him about his perspective on ego and his answer, which certainly went viral. You know, it just speaks volumes about where he's at right now. And you're seeing that, you know, bear out in the basketball that he's playing. And Eric, let me throw it to you because, you know, you're from the area. This is your neck of the woods. You know, the fan base, you know, the history, and it is, you can really feel it a day ahead of Game 6 when we're recording that this city is just ready to absolutely go bonkers if they get this job done.
I mean, we just had lunch over on Old World 3rd Street. And I mean, there's a vehicle that has Bucks flags on it. And it's honking, but it's not honking just like, it's honking in the tones of Bucks in 6, like yes. Bucks in 6. So the honking is meant for
how do
people.
You know it wasn't Suns in 4? Are we still doing Suns in 4?
That's a great question. Maybe the people behind me in Phoenix thought it was still Suns in 4. I'm not sure. But Yeah, like the whole city is just ready for it. And obviously we just got like a news, a press release from the Bucks that they're increasing the space around Fiserv Forum, which is known as the Deer District. So that in total, there could be 65,000 people in that block of people, with the people inside, the people outside, and now the added space that they've had. So if... I mean, it's going to be...
Was that audible? Did I groan out loud? I'm not sure if that was just in my head.
You sure did.
As you know, I'm looking out... Sorry, Eric. I'm looking out this window and you know, if folks were with us on Zoom, I could share it. It's like I'm staring at the area that you're talking about and I'm envisioning, you know, how the hell I'm going to get back to my hotel room tomorrow night after the game and do what we do. It's going to be absolute pandemonium. Again... if they win, and that's the thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, Sam, getting ahead of yourself there. It'll be cool to see, if they win, a home city celebrate with the team doing it there. Obviously, last season we got, you know, 15 media members in the bubble was about the only people around when the Lakers were celebrating. So that entire Staples Center run was stripped away. And then, you know, you go back two titles ago, pre-pandemic. Sam, I think me and you were both in Toronto. Game five, it felt like the closeout. They're up like six in the final minute. Remember Drake's like hyping up the crowd and you felt like Toronto was about to burst.
Yeah, I mean, and Slater, as you remember too, in that game six, you know, the Raptors fans damn near took over Oracle Arena. So yeah, I couldn't have imagined what it would have been like if it was actually in Toronto. And I also think though, and Slater, you kind of alluded to this, is that, you know, the psychology of these playoff series and more so the finals than any other is we just cannot forget how quickly things can flip. So the Suns come in today. We do media. And again, to help people understand the way it works, we sit down and we're in that small room with about 15 people. And, you know, the Bucks side comes through and it's Mike Budenholzer, Giannis, Chris Middleton. Then we go to the Suns and it's Monty Williams. And I think it was Chris Paul second, the Devin Booker in the one room. And Monty, I asked him about the fact that going into game five, he had given his team a speech that was captured for the TV cameras and shared with the viewing public about how he says to his players, he says, guys, you know, we put ourselves in this position. And then he clarified, he said, and I mean that in a good way, you put yourselves in a position to be tied 2-2 going into a game five. And so they dropped that game. And I asked him today, like, you already kind of gave that speech, you know, psychologically, how do you keep them going down that track where they don't, you know, call it let go of the rope or just let their spirits go down in the kind of way that would impact the way they compete. And he had nothing but incredibly positive things to say about what he has seen from his group in the couple of days after game five. And I do truly believe that they're fully capable of taking game six. And if they do, then we get reminded very quickly about the momentum factor, because then if you're the Bucks, of course, you still got to crack at it in game seven. But the idea of going back into that Suns arena and getting that job done is incredibly daunting.
And this series is, I think, I guess maybe this Bucks team, at least from my perspective, is really interesting in this regard, because so often in this postseason, and we were talking about this while we were out in Phoenix, like their backs have been against the wall. And that is the moment that they've responded, that it feels like things cannot get worse. And it feels like they just have no chance anymore. And then they respond. This is a different spot. Being up in this spot, being up 3-2, chance to close it out at home. You, as Sam said, have the momentum, if momentum is real. Like, you have everything going your way. And all of a sudden, you're thinking about like, hey, we can do this at home. And like, to the Bucks' credit, their answers have always been the same throughout the year. It's one game at a time. It's very boring. We're just trying to get better every day. Like, that's how they approach things. But the results show that they've shown up more often than not when their backs are against the wall, as opposed to being the team out on the lead foot. So I think that's where this gets really interesting, because, you know, I honestly might feel more comfortable in their ability to go out and win a game seven on the road than I do in, oh yeah, this team, front foot, they're going to close it out at home. Like, it's just an interesting spot from both these teams' perspective.
So they haven't lost four games in a row all year. They haven't lost three games in a row in about 6 months. And I just generally would say, not exactly a hot take here, that any team winning four games in a row in the finals, whenever they come, is incredibly hard. And then to hear Devin Booker and Chris talk about the basketball specifics of what they know they need to navigate. And Eric, you did a nice job today asking Monty Williams about this. You know, Dave, we can, Slater, you're the Suns expert here, so you can dive in. Like, they know that as much fun as it has been seeing Devin Booker just, you know, be so transcendent on this stage and be a guy who, as a first-time finals participant, is blowing away all the historical records about scoring, that you're not walking away with the W. And the ball movement that has been a major part of this team's identity and that really was there early on has disappeared. Chris Paul has struggled, obviously, with Jrue Holiday's pressure. You got 3 games of data of trying to tweak and figure out how to get over on the Bucks. It's going to be tough for the Bucks to do it a fourth time. But Slater, give me your breakdown on the Suns' side and what they need to fix here.
I'm looking at Chris Paul, and there was like a video floating out on social media the last few days. It was actually Isaiah Thomas on NBA TV back in when Chris Paul was a Clipper. And it was pretty critical. I mean, it was during one of those playoff runs. I don't think it's something Isaiah Thomas might say today, but he was talking about how all the great point guards in history, he was including himself, he named Stockton, Magic, they played dangerous games sometimes and like pushed the limit. And he felt like Chris Paul, whenever he was talking at some point in a Clippers series, was playing too safe. And I think there have been moments in this series where Chris Paul looks like he's out there like, oh man, you know, Jrue Holiday's hounding me, the Bucks length's getting to me, my shot's not there. I'm kind of just trying to get off the ball a little bit. And sometimes that even does lead to turnovers. But I thought, you know, you mentioned the desperation angle from a Phoenix side. I thought Chris Paul, we finally saw him really feel that urgency in like late third quarter, fourth quarter of game five. He went 4 of 4 and scored 10 points in the fourth quarter. The reason they had the ball with 30 seconds left down one and Devin Booker gets it stolen. But the reason they're in that game is Paul kind of got going. I mean, he hit some big shots that kind of gave them life. And I think for them to stun Milwaukee in game 6, I think they need an aggressive Chris Paul. I think they need a confident Chris Paul that's just like, yeah, I know I'm facing the length. Yeah, I know Jrue Holiday's hounding me, but he's trying to get to his spots. He's taking his jumpers because that's when they've been at the best in this postseason. I mean, that's when they've been at the best in this series, right? Remember game 1, Milwaukee has altered their defense, but I think that takes some of the load off Devin Booker too. I think Devin Booker's feeling the pressure of like, Paul doesn't have it, I need to do it. And that's what you're seeing.
Not to mention, I mean, some of these guys who were coming to the forefront on the Sun side earlier on and even in the conference finals, like, can we get a Mikal Bridges, you know, appearance offensively? Can we have DeAndre Ayton with another one of those games? You know, I think it was a game 1 where he, you know, was 7 of 8 early on, had a great first quarter. You know, some of the others, as we always call them in Shaq's favorite phrase, have been, you know, faded to the background. But we can't lose sight of the fact, Eric, that these games have turned on a hairpin. You know what I mean? Like the Jrue Holiday steal, you know, Suns are down 1 with a chance to win that thing. Going back to the block that we talked and wrote, you know, so much about, you know, that was a key moment late where this thing easily could have gone the other way and the Suns, you know, could be out front.
This thing is close. This is right. A tightly contested series. And that's the thing I've struggled with game 6 is obviously, like you said, momentum. Like, oh, this is the narrative. They can close it at home. Yeah, all these games have been really close. Like these
that's
two
just because we're ready to get off the road. That's all
that is. These two teams are very similar, right? Like there isn't this idea of, oh, you know, they have two superstars and they're just so much better than everybody else. Like it's, you know, the Bucks have a superstar in Giannis who's obviously just destroying this finals. And then the Suns have two guys in Paul and Booker that are really special. And then Chris Middleton's kind of throwing some stuff in and Jrue Holiday's kind of throwing some stuff in. Like there's no overwhelming favorite in this series. Like everybody's getting something from pretty much everyone on the floor. And like the Suns shot 60% from the field, 50% from 3 in the last game and still lost. Like this isn't the moment becoming too big for someone or some team being overmatched. Like these two teams are really close together and all these games have been, I mean, outside of the first two have been really tight and really close. And I mean, I think you got to start thinking about like, okay, can the Bucks actually close this one out? Because the Suns are right there on these last two games.
Eric, to steal your phrasing from today's press conference, I'm going to, you know, flip the script on you here. Since you said to Giannis, as you went to ask him a basketball question, you said, I know how much you love talking about your feelings.
So Eric, you and Giannis are wired similarly, but I know, Eric, how much you love talking about your feelings, but as the local Milwaukee area native and somebody who, again, we're going to lean into the idea that the Bucks could finish the job. And we're going to talk about some of the history here. Obviously, you go back to 74. We talked about it probably last week on the pod. You know, Oscar, Kareem, you know, those teams fall short in seven games against Boston. So the last time, you know, that there was a finals game like that at the end of a series, it was not a happy night in Milwaukee, and it was at the old arena, not this one. But just give us some of the color from around here about how the joy that would be felt. I mean, even our editor, one of our NBA editors, Rob Peterson, is from Milwaukee and was here today. And to hear Rob tell some old stories about just what it would mean. I know every fan base has their version of this, but, you know, what is the Milwaukee story in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, this city has obviously not had a champion in a really long time. And there are going to be people here that would say, oh, well, the Packers won all this time ago. And I know I'm crossing sports here, but whatever, you're gonna have to go with me. So in the city of Milwaukee, though, like, Green Bay is in Wisconsin. People that live in Milwaukee are Packers fans, but like, that wasn't their championship. Their parade did not come down Wisconsin Avenue. Like, that did not happen. So Milwaukee hasn't had one since 71. And like, you have to just kind of go through everything where all these teams have gotten close. You know, you go back to 01 and the Bucks are in the Eastern Conference Finals. They're feeling good about themselves. Then Scotty Williams throws an elbow at Allen Iverson. He gets suspended for game 7. George Karl's talking about a conspiracy. They don't have enough in game 7. They lose. And then obviously they would have seen the Lakers in that next round. But every Bucks fan worth their salt will remind you that, oh, by the way, the Bucks were 2-0 against the Lakers that year.
They would have swept them. They would have swept them.
Right.
Who was guarding Shaq? Who was guarding Shaq, though? I got to – Dad's a reach or something?
Joel Prezvilla.
Joel Prezvilla.
Shaq would have gone for about 40 and 20.
You don't have to tell me. I'm just telling you what a Wisconsin sports fan might say to you about
what Wisconsin sports radio is saying today right now.
Right. So, like, you go through that. And then, I mean, even if you just take this Bucks team and kind of go through all the things that you've seen, like, last year was insanely disappointing that you go up against the Heat team and just don't have enough. Giannis gets hurt, but even before Giannis gets hurt, you didn't really have the answers to beat them. And then you go back to the Eastern Conference Finals that first year. It felt like, you know, you're catching lightning in a bottle. You got everything going. You go up 2-0, you go to Toronto, and then you lose 4 straight. Like, what we're seeing the Suns possibly go through is what the Bucks went through in the Eastern Conference Finals. Kawhi Leonard takes over. Giannis doesn't have an answer. He doesn't have the guys that he needs to lean on. They weren't ready for it. And they just get jumped in 4 straight games and they end up losing. And, you know, if you continue looking through Wisconsin sports, I know Rob always likes to quote how many MVPs the Bucks have had in the last 15 years and not even been in a World Series, a Super Bowl, or an NBA Finals. This Bucks team is in that NBA Finals, but obviously they still have to win it. So this is a tortured fan base. I know one of the old podcasts that I used to be on, the motto was never trust the Bucks, because they will always disappoint you. And that always resonated with Bucks fans. They're like, yeah, I will never trust this team to be good because they're just going to break my heart in the end. So there is like this entire bit of somehow, some way the Bucks will screw it up. Like, that is what Bucks fans will feel. So they will not believe that they have won a championship until zeros are up on the board. And honestly, it might take another 10 minutes for them to be like, okay, is the league going to like disqualify this game or something? Like, did Giannis actually fail like a COVID test? Like, is there something here? Like, they will not believe it until they can see it with their own eyes. And that's just kind of what Wisconsin sports fans feel.
So I had a cool moment that I think it'd be a little fun to share on here. And Eric already knows about this, but ran into an old friend from the business the other day. Charles Gardner wrote for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for a very long time and was somebody who was covering Milwaukee sports long before Giannis came around and Chris Middleton, you know, in the old Bradley Center days. But he was in town and staying at the same hotel lobby that I was in. And I've said before, like, you know, Eric, I'm a West Coaster. I'm not here that often. So I have really enjoyed continuing to learn about the local landscape more so than I had before. So Charles was in town and he's going to be going to game six. And he's now a retired sports writer who's a season ticket holder. And to, you know, without going too deep in it, to have a conversation with him about what it would mean for the area. And even him, he Giannis was kind to him. Middleton was kind to him. He wants the best for those guys. And man, like, as we talked, and I'm not exaggerating, I actually got the chills, you know, in the lobby of this hotel, and not because the AC was blasting too much. Like, I kind of got wrapped up in his discussion about what it would mean. And that struck me a little bit. You've got a guy who's been out of the media game for a minute and who just can't wait to see if the Bucks can finish his job. And you mentioned Rob, you know, our editor from Milwaukee, even at lunch today, you could almost still sense that vibe of like, how are they going to mess this up? You know what I mean? Like, just nervous. So, you know, and with good reason, the history's been tough.
That's like a great look at the past and the ghosts and everything leading up to the moment. I think this is important for the next decade of for the Bucks too. To me, this, like, if they win, would like stamp Giannis, or would just basically put to the grave any like Giannis on the move talk. Because even when he signed the extension, remember at the time it was like, well, you could sign it and then do the Paul George with Oklahoma City with this like thought of, hey, I'll sign it, but if I tell you I want to leave, you have to let me leave. If they win this thing, you know, even if they have disappointments over the next few years, you have one in the bag. To me, this puts him online to potentially be in the Dirk, the Duncan, the Steph Curry realm of when you get a title, when you achieve it early, you can kind of just keep on that path in whatever market you're in. So I think this would be just so important for the next decade.
Man, Eric, you believe this coastal elite here trying to act like Giannis is going to leave?
yes, I do, actually. I do believe
me too,
that.
Me too. Because I'm one of them.
And on top of it, I think it's really fascinating. At 26 years old, again, if the Bucks win, Giannis would have two MVPs and a ring. As far as pacing goes, I mean, that's top 10 NBA player of all time. If his career continues and he continues to put up numbers, like, that's what we're talking about with him. And like, I don't, again, maybe people don't comprehend it or don't think about it, but like,
no, I get you from an accomplishment standpoint. I mean, you know, that's, you know, you got me a little nervous when you say top 10, we're not there, but yes, I get your point for sure.
And especially when the conversation is, oh, I don't know if he's good enough to lead this team, or I don't know if he's Robin or whatever. Like,
You're doing a terrible perk. That was a terrible perk impersonation.
I cannot get his accent. I won't even try to do so. My voice does not get that deep either. And like, it to me, it's just going to be kind of crazy to see one, like Anthony said, like, it's going to flip, right? Like, okay, Giannis is going to be there for life. But then also on top of it, it's like, okay, how do we discuss this dude going forward? Because that is a short list of players that have done those things that he's done, and you throw a ring on top of it.
Well, remember this season, he was basically disqualified from the MVP because it was like, dude, absolutely, we can't give you a third MVP without a title. I mean, now next season, he probably enters as the MVP favorite, and we'll be looking to basically give him the award again as we talk about, you know, piling in accomplishments. Yes, where Sam is correct is when we talk top 10, like multiple titles, all-star game after all-star game. And, you know, I covered a guy like Kevin Durant. I know he didn't win a title early, although he got to one and nearly did. It was like stuff along the way happens. He has the 3-foot injuries, the Warriors stuff, the Achilles. Like, you know, it's tough to talk. We're now only discussing Kevin Durant in that realm, and he's basically, you know, 8 years ahead of Giannis. But at the same time, he is building quite an early to mid-20s resume.
So not only that, but in the moment, to, you know, stay with the Giannis theme here, in the moment,
we don't have to do that, Sam. By the way, we're not trying to win Game Six tomorrow. We can talk all we want about it.
Slater, like, Eric knows this, and anybody on social media who can notice that I've gotten very Giannis heavy with my content, it's not a real secret that I've been enjoying Giannis's perspective, and I'm now just a student of his psychological school of thought. You know, trying to learn from
Sam's a softy. If I was an NBA superstar, I would be on the press conference and he would ask me, I would go, Sam, that was a terrific question. Thank you for asking that. I mean, your journalism is awesome. So anyway,
He is cracking me up. Today we had another funny one. He walks in, Slater, I don't know if you were watching, he walks in with a big smile on his face and he looks at everybody and he says, I'm going to do a terrible Giannis impersonation, but yeah, everybody, we good. We all get tested. And we laugh, say, yeah, we're good, Giannis, we got tested. So I told him as I started the first question, said, you know, I tested negative, no worries. And he said, you have proof? You have proof? Want me to email you? I don't know what to do here. But like, he's in a good place. He's in the moment. He keeps talking about it. And to take it back to my other point, this finals performance and the way that it's not just a matter of, oh, this two-time MVP, you know, played moderately well in the finals and they won a championship. This dude has obviously had those 2 40-10 games and then has had two iconic finals plays, two consecutive games in a row, the type of stuff that, you know, that you'll be watching. I don't know why I'm drawing a blank on ESPN's History Channel, but classic. Whatever the hell channel, classics. Thank you.
Which does that even exist anymore? There's like 9 channels.
That's what I was. I don't know. Whatever.
YouTube NBA classics. TV so shows a bunch of archived games.
Yeah. Whatever. Wherever you look at the old fart stuff, like back in the day, like, you know, and when the kids who haven't even been born yet are watching stuff about Giannis in these finals, they're going to do 15 minutes on each of those plays, the block and the oop. So he has been tremendous and the kind of way that I do think it's absurd. I get it. Middleton's played really well, but can we stop with the idea that Giannis is not the finals MVP right now if they win it? So I don't even think that's a debate. And he has just put his stamp on this thing in the kind of way that an all-time great does.
Yeah, I mean, I saw people talking about, oh, like, you know, who wins finals MVP? And it's like, okay, so one guy is averaging 32.2 points per game. The other guy's averaging 25.4 points per game. Okay, he's got the advantage there. Oh, Chris Middleton, 6.6 rebounds. Pretty nice. Oh, 13 for Giannis. Just doubling him up real quick. Oh, maybe assists are close. Okay, yeah, Giannis has more assists than Middleton as well. Like, every category is his. Steals, blocks, all
even
of it.
Like, CJ, I mean, is it just guys? I mean, I'm talking former players. Like, is it just former players love the wings? Is it just?
I think the internet just loves to just rent debate stuff, and players are included in that.
CJ McCollum.
He's an internet Twitter user. He's a, you know, he's social media. I mean, he says odd stuff sometimes. I mean, to me, I would just ask the Suns. You're going over your scouting report. Who are you talking about first? Who right. are you discussing? Like containing. Right. Okay, yeah, good. Hey, Mikal Bridges, you need to do a good job on Chris Middleton. Hey, everybody else, there's this monster we're trying to contain. Yeah, Chris Middleton is not finals MVP.
By the way, Slater, this is completely out of pocket. I'm going to do it anyway. You know, Fred Katz slander when he's not even here to defend himself.
Lopez MVP, is that what you're saying?
No. How are you feeling about your perspective of Devin Booker being the best player on the Suns these days?
Terrific. Certainly Chris Paul certainly hasn't overtaken the mantle. Now, what that's we point, may be yeah. learning in these finals is Devin Booker's not ready to be 1A on a title team. I don't know. We'll see. One interesting thing I would say about game five is
Wait, hold on. I got to hit the brakes. I mean, let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, these games came down to a play. You know what I mean? Like,
well, Sam,
if a play.
They lost game five in the 6 minutes that Devin Booker sat in second quarter. He left the game up 16, he came back up 2. In a game where we're talking about slim margins, they went minus 14. And to me, when we're talking game six adjustments, one of, I think, Monty Williams' adjustment is, I think Devin Booker's going to play 46 minutes. I think what you saw in the second half where he sat 42 seconds in the fourth quarter and they're like, get back in there. I think you're going to see that. And I don't know. I mean, are you about to argue that Devin Booker's not their best player?
No, you're hearing me completely wrong. I'm ganging up on Fred. When
oh yes, let's go then. Yeah. My bad. Yes.
No, I'm saying that I think Devin does look to be worthy of being 1A on a title team, and it's just a game that has come down to inches. And you know, if I mean, listen, the Jrue Holiday steal was incredible. So yeah, if Devin finds a way to rise up and hit that shot before Jrue gets to him, then it's, you know, Devin's the front runner for Finals MVP. And this thing is very, very different.
Yeah, he's winning finals MVP if the Suns come back. I mean, I shouldn't say that for sure, because if Paul goes like 41-41 and like two straight wins to pull him out, I think the narrative might shift in his direction. But yeah, I mean, to this point, I mean, Booker's, what, 82 points the last two games? And I mean, I definitely agree with some of the commentary that it's kind of what Milwaukee wants Phoenix to do. But he's off, man. He is impressive. Some of his shot making, even if it's Kobe-like with the ball dominance, it's also Kobe-like in the shot making.
Yeah, right. I mean, today I asked Monty Williams essentially that exact question, because earlier this postseason, Bucks Nets second round, PJ Tucker, like, I'm not going to say yelled at me, because that would be like a little bit strong, but he like reminded me, he was like, hey man, KD's going to score. You know KD's going to score. But when I get mad is if someone comes to help me when he's trying to score. Like, if we let everyone else get stuff, then we're losing multiple ways. Like, we're losing because KD's scoring, and we're losing because those guys are getting something. And, like, he was super impassioned about it. And, I mean, like, I essentially told Monty Williams the same thing today. And he was like, and I was like, okay, so now how do you have, like, Devin who's going off, he's incredible, he's getting buckets. How do you try to find like the balance? Because you're not going to complain about it, right? Like Devin Booker shooting 60% or whatever it was in game five. That ain't a bad thing. Like, that's not bad. That's good. But there is something to be said about getting everyone else involved. And Monty was like, all right, well, I'm not going to tell you what my game plan is. And I was just like, okay, I get it. But like, also, how do you like try to find the balance? And he said, yeah, that's a point that's well taken, because you do kind of fall out of balance when everyone is just watching Devin cook, and he's cooking well. He's a master chef. But you got to find other ways to get those other guys involved. And really, you saw in games one and games two, Bridges was huge. Aiden was huge. And those Aiden's guys
been quiet lately, right? That's kind of like one of the forgotten names of the last few games is like DeAndre Ayton. And then the other number I would point to in game five, the Suns went 13 and 19 from three, which like what a percentage, but 19 3-point attempts in the year 2021. That's a problem.
I think secretly, not to out you guys like this, I think secretly both of you want this thing to go to a game seven because, you know, Eric, you mentioned Middleton, you know, cooking like a chef. That makes me think of Slater's favorite dude, Guy Fieri. I mean, Slater, if there's a game seven, you might finally get, you know, the who spot it to go say hello and be a man about it and go meet your guy.
Maybe he'll meet me at Hanny's. We can go to the back, Diners, Drive-ins, and Dives, cook up some pizza.
And then name, and you're gonna sit here and stare, you know, darts through me as I out you like this. I think Eric wants to go back to Phoenix just because of your favorite fan that was behind you at the game. Suns fan who I keep describing as like a Johnny Lawrence lookalike, very loud, tough guy type personality. And he was, and Slater, we have experience with this from our Oklahoma City Western Conference Finals days. He was reading Eric's tweets, loudly screaming them as he looked over his shoulder, you know, Bucks go on a 9-2 run. Bucks go on a 9-2 run.
This sounds fantastic. Like
not the best working conditions. And I'm talking like, I look up and I'm a row ahead of Eric and he, grabbing the railing, leaning over. I mean, I laugh about it. It was to the point of like, okay, we're probably going to have to ping security and see if, you know, they can maybe do something here. And it got better in the second half. And good Lord, I hope he's not a tampering listener, because then I just made Eric's life miserable.
That's when you know, like the brightness on your screen scroll, that's when you go very low on that one. Try to make this drunk dude read.
Yes, but for entertainment purposes, yeah, we joked after the fact that, and to Eric's credit, he didn't engage, he didn't react, which Slater, as you know, I did not have that level of restraint years ago when a Thunder fan was in my business, but he was going to tweet stuff that, you know, it's like the old Anchorman bit where, you know, you just read the teleprompter no matter what's on it. And he was going to tweet, you know, like, I am a jackass or something like that, and just see if the guy would scream it.
I think he would have. Like, he would have been too caught in the moment.
So that could be the game seven fun. So guys, we'll see what happens in game six. Let's pivot here for a minute before we bounce and get back to our other parts of our work life. Slater, put on your I know you're on the Warriors focus side, but the Team USA landscape is interesting, and it also blends right into these finals. It's so
concerning,
unique.
Is what it is.
Again, reminding folks if they don't know, you got Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday on the Bucks, and Devin Booker from the Suns who have committed to Team USA. So it's wild because whatever happens next, those three guys are going to be getting on a plane together and going to Tokyo immediately to be part of Team USA, but they dropped the game to Nigeria right out the gate. They dropped the game to Australia. They get Spain. Am I leaving anything out?
They had a game so canceled, and they won. I think it'd be Argentina. But yeah, I mean the roster's not in the type of shape that you'd want. Is they're flying over today with only eight players because, as you mentioned, three are still in the finals. And Zach LaVine entered health and safety protocols today. It does sound like a contact tracing situation because they're talking about like there's still hope LaVine will join the team in Tokyo in a few days, several days, whatever. I wouldn't even be shocked if he ends up being on the plane with the $2 and the Suns.
Well, don't put him too close.
Like, I don't know if Jeremy Grant was in health and safety protocols a few days. Then yesterday he's scoring against Spain. But I mean, so. And also Kevin Love just like flamed out of Team USA, and then now JaVale McGee has replaced him. Kelton Johnson's in because Bradley Beal is in health and safety protocols and won't be exiting in time. So it's a fluctuating roster. There is it's not a one game elimination because you have like the preliminary rounds and all that, but basically there are going to be moments where doesn't matter what's happened before or after, they have to win this game. I think they're very vulnerable against some of these teams, really any of it, like Australia, Spain. But also at the same time, with a shorthanded team, I saw them against Spain yesterday, handle them in the second half because Lillard's hot, Durant's still on the court. There was a little bit more urgency. The Olympics are closer. I think the sight of the Gasol brothers and some of those Spanish players maybe excited them to play hard. And when they did in the second half, you're like, oh, yeah, still by far the most talented team. I mean, like, just look at who they started yesterday. They should still win gold. It's just going to be an adverse path to trying to win gold.
Right, right. And hopefully along the way, our guy Joe Vardon, who's doing a great job as always, can recalibrate with Pop. They've had some fun moments on the media side early
I think they both enjoy it. I think, Sam, you know them both. Like, they're...
Hey, I give Joe credit. This was pretty great. I texted him the other day. Again, I think it's safe to share this. And I had only seen the clip of Pop talking. If the listeners aren't aware of what we're talking about, Pop was asked about the loss, the first loss, I think it was, but also the general idea that Team USA is expected to blow teams out. And he questioned that premise big time and said, you know, the idea that is what happens. That doesn't happen in international play with good teams. And that's just not factually correct. And to Joe's defense, it turned out, I didn't know it was even Joe asking these questions, our fellow national writer at The Athletic. And Joe, I texted him, I said, hey, who was sparring with Pop in that presser? And I get an emoji back of just the waving hand. Yeah, that was me. So, but yeah, they both do have a little bit of that edge for sure.
Yeah, Pop, that first presser, can I swear on this podcast?
Oh, do it, man. Let it rip.
Popovich is
my kids don't listen.
So he's up there with Tatum, and you know what's your message, right? They just lost to Nigeria. Joe asked him about like American exceptionalism and if that's ended. You could just, right when the term American exceptionalism exited Joe's mouth, you could see Pop just like the flames in his eyes. And you know, he spent the entire press conference like poo-pooing a question from a local guy, whatever. And I was kind of sitting towards the back of the room, and he's walking out with Tatum. And as he's exiting, still an earshot of me and at least two or three other reporters looks at Tatum as they're walking out and goes, those are some fucking terrible questions, weren't they? As he's walking out. And I'm just like, he's not, I guess eliminating this act with the media as he moves into more like a national stage with USA. He's all for it. And like I was joking earlier, Joe Vardon will not be backing away from that. That's one of the things I like about Joe in a press conference setting.
Yeah, no doubt. He's got that old-timey kind of pit bull in him.
He wants the smoke. He wants all of the smoke.
He does. What are you plugging Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes now?
No, that's just a phrase. It's not my fault they host a podcast by that name.
I agree. He wants the smoke. The Bucks want the smoke. The Suns want the smoke. Guys, we will see what happens in game six. I'm going to let you all bounce on that note. In the off chance, or not even the off chance, in the chance that the Suns win this thing, preemptive apologies to both of you for mainly Eric for, you know, probably making game seven harder than it needs to be for you as you go back and, you know, the Suns fans that they don't know what to chant anymore, by the way. And I've given them a hard time about their, you know, math is hard skills because Suns in four went viral. Bucks fans have gone viral with Bucks in six. We'll see if it goes seven. Appreciate you guys jumping on and thanks for joining me.